TFM.
Fun will now commence.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Journey, our dedicated Star Trek Voyager podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I brought us some tasty treats today. They're inspired by that Lou Bega hit. So here, go ahead and have a little bit of ration pack number 5.
Oh, so delicious. Thank you so much. I was hoping you were going to say that because ration pack number 5 is my favorite.
You know, it's so funny that I've seen this episode many times. It's been a long time since I saw it last time. Never, ever did it occur to me, or did I notice, that she tells Chakotay, that Janeway tells Chakotay that she's going to have ration pack number 5. But this time, the moment she said it, that Lou Bega song went off in my head.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it. Maybe, you know, we're thinking of Love Potion number 9, you know, and it's Chakotay and Janeway talking. I'm just saying.
Well, they do seem to be getting along very well.
They do. This episode. They do. There's definitely a spark there, one might say.
There certainly is. All right, everyone, we're going to continue our 30th anniversary rewatch of Star Trek Voyager with episode 4 of season 1, Phage. And here is a quick rundown of the story. Chakotay, Kim, and Neelix beam into caves on a rogue planetoid to search for dilithium, but they come back empty-handed. Not only do they have no dilithium, Neelix left something even more important behind, his lungs. With these vital organs now in the possession of mysterious aliens, the ship's new self-proclaimed chef will have to postpone the opening of his kitchen and stay in sickbay, where the doctor has fitted him with holographic lungs. As the crew search for the aliens and try to retrieve Neelix's organs, Janeway is confronted with an unexpected moral dilemma. Matthew, after being stalked by Vidians, you may never listen to that famous song by The Police the same way again.
Always watching you. It's terrifying. Yeah. So
every breath, every move you take, every move you make, how my poor lungs ache with every step you take.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, I love it.
All right. So here we are. We're jumping into the 4th episode of the new series, and they give us, I think, a refreshing surprise in this episode for Star Trek at this point in time. They give us a species that has some real depth to it.
Yeah, I think that the most interesting thing was that the previous episode kind of left us pretty cold. And we weren't really all that excited about it, in all honesty. And yet, then this episode comes around, and, you know, this is the thing that we want you to do. We want you to create something that we've never seen before. And the idea that a race has been stricken by a disease which kind of eats away at their system, and the only way they've found to combat this is to harvest other organs and then make them compatible with their bodies so that those can slowly be eaten away. And what's crazy too is that we know from the episode their technology is amazing when it comes to medical procedures. Well, 'cause
they've been forced to innovate and advance their technology.
Exactly. And so I just find this incredibly interesting. And the whole idea of creating a race where self-preservation comes to this desperate of actions is pretty wonderful. And you mentioned too, you know, the whole idea of this creating a huge conundrum then for Janeway. This is, I mean, it's great Star Trek. Like, isn't that kind of what Star Trek is? Is we're talking about these morality plays, which, you know, really challenge our ideals and everything. And the terrifying nature of this, too, is that there's no backup for for Voyager. So running into this race is really scary idea, because if they're a more aggressive race, this is absolutely terrifying. Right.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and so, you know, thank God for that, for Voyager, that this race is not a terribly aggressive race going out and actually seeking living beings to do this from. They only do that when they're completely desperate. And so I just think, you know, it's this is the type of thing. This is actually the promise of Voyager, right? Which is to do something very, very different, to give us something we've never really seen before. And I've got to say, you know, I hate to give it away, but I like it. I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I remember watching it the first time, and of course, being a lot younger and not really thinking through the aspects of what the Vidians were going through in the way that I do now and have over the more recent years that we've been doing discussions here on the network. Just noticing, you know, the grotesque nature of the Vidians and how horrible it would be if someone is stealing your organs. But in this is the other thing about doing a rewatch is, of course, we know what happens with the Vidians over time and how the species is used. And we have more opportunities to come to understand the situation that they're in and why they do what they do, and that they're not like the Borg just mindlessly assimilating people, or the Klingons who just love to fight, or the Hirogen later on in that way as well. So they're a nuanced species. And this is a case, again, I think a lot like the DS9 writers did, where they're creating something that they can then play with, and they can use it to tell deeper, more nuanced stories, which in this case are contained to individual episodes. But they allow us to look at the threat and to look at someone who's different from us and have to really stop and think, just like Janeway does in this story. And Kate Mulgrew has talked about this episode and sort of the dilemma that Janeway's placed in, and then how that made her feel. And others who were on the set talked about how Kate Mulgrew visually, you could see the seriousness and like the gray areas and what the Vidians are doing. When you look at someone and you understand that they are trying to survive, and how do you deal with a situation like that? So
yes,
I think that the Vidians are one of the most interesting races created in Star Trek, actually. And it's not something that I was expecting heading into the fourth episode of Voyager to see something like that presented, especially in an episode that centers on Neelix.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's also, I mean, kind of the interesting thing to me, and maybe that's it's probably a good time to talk about this idea of that this episode focuses on Neelix, because it's difficult for me in this episode, because as much as I like it, there is, I would say, kind of the Neelix problem in this episode, because the way in which they're asking Ethan Phillips to play the character, and I don't think this is really his fault, because we're only a few episodes in. So this comes down to the writers, and this comes down to the directors asking for these things as he's trying to figure out the character. And there's just, you know, he's too over the top all the time. And I think that's kind of the thing that makes him a frustrating character. And here it really comes out. And even to the way in which it almost, the thing with him and Kes, and him being frustrated with the whole dynamic with her and then Paris –
Yeah.
What's interesting about that is
jealousy
just
that, was like, it's a bit much, right?
Yeah. It comes off just kind of incredibly creepy, honestly.
Yeah,
too much. And so I think that's the thing that I'm actually kind of just bothered by with the episode, because I don't really, Neelix as a character, I'm not enjoying in this episode in that way. And so, and the thing is that you do want to feel sorry for the character that this happens to, but it's really that moment where he gets jealous of Paris, and it's that clinginess that he's having with Kes that I just kind of like, oh dude, come on, you know? And so there's all of these character qualities about this character that I'm just not responding to when he's on screen. And I do find that to be kind of a frustration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. Like, I think the story would have been better served, certainly, if they had not included the jealousy angle. But they want to create this conflict between, maybe conflict isn't exactly the accurate word, but between Neelix and Tom that centers on Kes, and build that through the episodes. And here, I think with the situation that he's in, it just really doesn't make sense for the character, because if you think most people in that situation, I don't think that they would be worried about is their girlfriend now calling Paris by his first name or being jealous in this way, right? You've got bigger things to worry about. So it doesn't quite fit with the situation that's going on. Not if we are supposed to have a good image of Neelix and to be pulling for him here. So that aspect, I think the story would have been served a lot better. Now, what's interesting, though, here is that the origin of the story, the original idea was that it wasn't Neelix and his lungs, but it was Tom and his heart. And like Tom's heart was basically destroyed in some way. And the doctor had to give him a holographic heart. And it was then changed to be Neelix and the lungs. I don't know which would have been better. I don't know if it makes more sense for it to be Neelix and the lungs, because we're dealing in this case with species, both with Neelix and Kes. We've got Talaxian and Ocampa, and then we've got the Vidians. So everyone involved here, they're all species from the Delta Quadrant, and that allows you to maybe play with things in a way. Because if it were Tom and his heart, the doctor could have easily dealt with it, because the human heart would have been, you know, in the system. So that's probably the primary reason for changing it, rather than it being about this character or that character working in terms of their position within the crew. But that was the original idea of the story.
Yeah, I think the other reason not to do this is, you know, Tom has just had an episode. Because, you know, he spent a lot of time with Janeway in the previous episode. And so I think it would be, it might be more interesting just in the sense that because it's Tom, and Tom is, I hate to say it, but like a less annoying character, that would be an interesting thing to be able to then focus on. But at the same time, you know, I do see the reason for wanting to focus here on Neelix and Kes and utilize this as an opportunity then to take these characters and make them more interesting, right? And begin to build them as a part of what we're doing here in Star Trek Voyager. You want these characters to begin to have stories of their own. And, you know, one of the most important parts of this episode is the way in which you're actually going to take the character of Kes and you're going to allow her to be able to grow and to become somebody who has more to do than just being the side character with Neelix. We're actually going to give her a purpose on the show. And that's also, I think, an incredibly important part of this episode. And so I get why we focus on Neelix, and I get why then that allows us to be able to focus on Kes, and it also allows us to be able to focus on the Doctor and really create these characters and make them way more dynamic than they were in the first couple of episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is good that they're doing that with Kes this early on, because I always kind of like the character of Kes, but they don't find the way to utilize her on the show, which is what, you know, ultimately ends up being a reason why she isn't on the show all the way to the end. But let me ask you about Neelix, though. So I was just thinking, as you described Neelix, we all know that person, maybe at work or in a group of friends or someone, but someone who's always upbeat to the point where it's annoying. Mm-hmm. The opposite of Debbie Downer.
Yeah.
And Neelix is kind of that person on the ship, right? And I think that's why he feels annoying a lot of the time, because he is a very positive person. He is very upbeat and generally a happy person, which does give us good contrast when we see him in this situation where he's trapped staring at the ceiling and he can't do anything. But I also think that that upbeat nature that he's exhibiting all the time sometimes doesn't mesh with what's going on with the rest of the crew in certain situations. And therefore it also comes across as annoying to the viewer because it feels like incongruous with what's happening on the screen in other situations, not necessarily in this story, but in other stories. Him making the kitchen here, though, what did you think about that, where he goes in and he takes the captain's private dining room and turns it into a kitchen without asking, not only literally him doing it, but also as they're building the elements of storytelling into the series here, it's only in its fourth episode, taking a ship that wasn't really meant for this kind of long voyage and giving us a space like Ten Forward or Quarks so that they can then utilize that ongoing.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is actually one of the things in the episode that makes sense. I think that this is one of the things that is really interesting about the episode because the episode is clearly about the fact that this ship is running on dodgy amounts of power. and that they're struggling because of that. And the idea, again, the promise of Voyager is to test the Starfleet crew in a way that we've never been tested before. Mm-hmm. So to take a ship, which is basically meant to be in the beta, alpha, and maybe gamma quadrant for, you know, a few weeks, maybe a few months or whatever, been able to return back to Federation space, and then throw them across the galaxy. So they're not the Enterprise D, where they're
the
made,
Enterprise D would have a much easier time in the situation, right? Because they're
literally made for those missions. I mean, the Voyager is a science vessel who's made specifically to go in and explore scientific phenomena and then return. And so the idea of, you know, Kes talking about in a previous episode of making like botanical gardens and like hydroponics type bays to grow food, really smart. The idea of then utilizing that food in an actual kitchen that doesn't utilize the power that a replicator does also makes a lot of sense. So there's a lot in this episode where they're taking the promise of Star Trek Voyager, the whole premise of it, and they're really making it work. And I love that. I think it's great. It's one of the things, again, that will set Voyager apart then from all the other shows. I mean, this is one of those areas where it's like, this is what makes Voyager different as a series because we create a galley kitchen that we haven't seen since Star Trek VI.
Yeah, right.
And then, of course, we'll see an Enterprise, right? Because that's something that they pick up because they don't even really have food synthesizers in the same way that the original series does. And so I think it's fantastic. I mean, this is the place where I'm like watching this episode and I'm like so happy because the things that we were kind of frustrated with our previous episode, a lot of them, it's like, it's like they got it in this episode. What the show was trying to be, and you know, when you read all of the magazines and stuff like we both did, was it was coming out about, like, this is the type of stuff they were talking about wanting to do with the show, and then they did it, and you're like, oh, thank God, this is what I'm coming to this show hoping for, is to watch this crew have to try and figure out a whole new way of life that they're not ready for. That we're not ready for, but it makes it really exciting then because I don't know what's going to happen every episode.
Mm-hmm. So with so much going on around the center plot of this episode of Neelix's lungs being stolen, with so much other stuff that we're talking about going on around it, hypothetically, how do you think Voyager would have worked if it had come out of the gate following the DS9 format of really having a serialized story? And you do have A plots within episodes, but you've also got a lot of stuff that's just blurring from episode to episode. The aspects you're talking about here are like figuring out how to survive in the Delta Quadrant, developing food resources, the kitchen, how do we deal with the power limitations and such could have been built out more effectively if we didn't have to jump from episode to episode where we don't see those things very much for a while.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think this is one of those places where when we were talking about the very first episode and then we were talking about the second episode and a lot of the kind of story elements seemed to kind of be ratified, like with the whole thing with the Maquis and the Starfleet crew, and it's almost where I think it would Voyager, especially the first season, would have behooved them to kind of plot out the season and say before we even know what the stories are, we kind of need and want these plot elements to be a part of each of these episodes so that they continue in creating this cohesive structure to the season because we are only following one ship. We're not having to worry about what's going on in the rest of the Federation. And so really digging into this crew and what they're going through is what matters. And so, but that's not happening, and you can tell that's not happening, and I think it's one of those places where we're not quite in that serialized television yet.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, put it this way, you know, even shows today that are on network television that are more standalone episodes, they're clearly growing the characters from one episode to the next, right? Mm-hmm. And that's one of the key points of each episode. And they could do that here with Voyager, and there's some aspects of that, but it doesn't always feel as consistent as it could be. And I think that's one of the places where sometimes we might get frustrated as we move forward with Voyager. But again, I think this episode actually really picks up a lot of that stuff really well. And it almost feels like this episode fits better with the first and second episode than it does actually the third episode, which kind of seems to negate some of that stuff almost a little bit. And it doesn't feel as like, I don't know, as well put together. But this one, it's like, if this had been episode three, it'd be like, wow, this show is they're just got bangers every week.
Yeah, it would. It would, because this episode, I said last time, of course, I do like Time and Again, but this episode is definitely stronger. And when you look at it, when you just watch it, you can feel like, okay, they got it in one, they got it in two, three, they missed it, four, they remembered what they're trying to build with the show. Whereas in reality, of course, they're breaking all these story ideas in a less linear fashion, right? So it just happens that Time and Again,
yeah,
didn't hit the goals as well as Phage did.
Yes.
Rather than it being like, okay, they did that story and then they got together and said, okay, what did we do wrong there? Let's fix it in the next one. You know, that's not really how the process works, even though it can feel that way. Another thing to talk about here, which I did find interesting and that I like, is that when they looked to figure out what would be causing this disease to consume the Vidians, rather than just making up something like they usually do in Star Trek, you know, you've got a long list of things like, you know, Rigelian fever, or in DS9's The Quickening, we have the Teplin Blight, which has been engineered by the Dominion.
Yes, yes.
That does kind of a similar thing, right? Like it eats away the body. But instead of just making up some kind of science fiction disease like this, they actually looked to bacteriophage, which is a real world virus that infects bacteria. And there are different types of phages. And in today's world, they're sometimes used in the laboratory to, you know, work on treatments for things. But basically what they do, however, and one reason that they are used is that they can adapt very quickly.
Yes.
And they spread very quickly as well. And they evolve rapidly. And it makes it very difficult, in this case, for the Vidians to find a treatment for the disease that's consuming them. And so by using a real world biological inspiration for the disease, I think it also helps to lend that reality to the Vidians.
Yes.
When we look at them and we can really look at them like, okay, yeah, this is something that can really happen. And what would we do if it happened to us? How would we deal with it? Which is another thing that Brandon Braga was looking at. You know, he asked a question in developing this episode of what if the bubonic plague, when it swept through Europe during the Black Death, what if that had not subsided? You know, it kind of naturally went away in a few cycles, but what if it hadn't, and it's something humans had to live with basically forever, because the Vidians have been dealing with this for 2,000 years. Right? What would happen to us then? So all of these real-world aspects, I think, were well-chosen to make this story resonate more with us.
Yeah. I love the fact that this actually feels so real. Mm-hmm. And not only does it feel real, but it's one of those things where, you know, after what we've all been through now, you know, with the COVID scare, and, you know, again, thankfully that turned out to be a thing that was not as bad as we thought it was going to be, and it could have been so much worse and all that stuff, right? What would have happened, again, if that had turned out to be something? And so I think that's the beauty of the idea of as we talked about the Vidians and them being this race that are really believable, this believability is because what do you do when your very existence is completely threatened and there seems to be really no good answer other than just trying to survive, which is another incredible part of this episode when you really think about it. It's like, okay, we're still living, but then in that sense, we're only just surviving.
Yeah.
What life is actually happening? And that's a question that we're struggling with in as we meet the Vidians here. And what's so wonderful about that is that it's the very thing that allows Janeway then to be able to have the compassion that she has for them. And I really, that's something that strikes me, because the real world nature of this makes her compassion feel so real. But at the same time, it's also the thing that makes her wrath so real. Right. And so she's compassionate in the sense of, we're not going to do anything to you guys, because what good would it do at this point? But if this ever happens again, I will do everything in my power to keep my people safe. And and then what's also beautiful is that that compassion is what allows us then to be able to save Neelix in the first place, because that compassion allows there to be a conversation. And so there really truly is, you know, this is kind of like Star Trek at its finest, right? Is that not reacting with the swiftest amount of vengeance possible allows something that we thought impossible to be possible. And that is incredibly interesting about this episode.
Yeah. Well, it shows that stepping back and looking at a situation from multiple perspectives, being willing to have a dialogue about something, and also being able to accept that while you might not agree with why someone or a group of people does something, there could be a valid reason why they're doing it. And it doesn't mean you have to accept it or endorse it, but being able to assess the situation and have a dialogue, you know, can lead to solutions and understanding and the acceptance that, you know, there are situations in the world, that in life, that not everyone has to do exactly the same thing.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and again, there is just this, there's this wonderful moment of it, and it's the way that Mulgrew plays it, because there's a pause, and then there's clearly an emotional reaction she has, and she realizes, okay, I have to approach this differently than I thought I was going to. And the beauty is in that performance, right? Because you can see all of that happening all over her face. And that is that, that's great Star Trek, right? It's the same way in which I think, you know, our original series actors were able to do it. You know, I honestly think Shatner was really good at that too. I think it's the same way, you know, as my wife and I just finished season one of The Next Generation. I think even though Patrick Stewart doesn't love his performances in that season, I think he's actually really good in that season, you know? He specifically, I think, is one of the people on that show who really, because he's a stage actor in so many ways, he's used to having every part of his being portray what he's trying to do. And that's the, you know, Mulgrew does that in that scene. And again, it's her first reaction is almost the mama bear, right? Wants to come out for her crew. And yet it's her ability to rein that in, to show compassion on these people, because they're not doing this on purpose. That again leads us to a solution that, you know, for us, we think is technologically impossible. And then we find out is possible. And I love it.
I think the technologically impossible part, I think, is also a good point, because that plays to arrogance that people have, that they already know everything. I think humanity today in the 21st century, in a lot of areas, has that attitude too, that like, well, yeah, of course we can do anything, and if we can't do it, then it must be impossible. Whereas, you know, we're really still in our infancy in terms of our technological abilities, our scientific understanding of how the universe works. Yeah, we do know a lot and we can do a lot, but there's so much still to be discovered. And within Star Trek, the Federation, because of how advanced its technology is and how vast its knowledge is portrayed as being at the pinnacle, right? And so when they do encounter people who have abilities far beyond theirs, it can sometimes be hard for them to stop for a moment and realize that, yeah, maybe we don't actually know everything. So I think that's a good point. And about Janeway and Kate Mulgrew's performance, I think it really is because the story connected with her in the way that the writers hoped it would also connect with the viewers.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Jerry Taylor talked about it, and Jerry Taylor said that Kate Mulgrew was herself fighting tears when that scene was being shot, when she heard the story of those people.
So great.
Because she as a person was so genuinely affected that she was really fighting not to break down as a person. So not trying to portray that as a character, but it was real for her. And so I think that's why that comes through so strongly.
And I really appreciate that. And I think it's one of the things that it's really working about the show so far. And, you know, the other thing that I think is fascinating here is, and I don't, you know, I don't know if anybody, when they began this series, thought to themselves, the Doctor was going to be the real standout.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
And yet what's really interesting about this episode is the way in which the struggle of the Doctor is so real. And again, you know, he's a hologram, and so we don't really think of him as basically being a real person. And yet the struggle that he has is real because even though he's a hologram, he's having all of these actual real human emotions of feeling inadequate for the job that he's been given, realizing that the weight of the crew's health and well-being is on his shoulders, realizing, of course, you know, he doesn't even have the help from somebody like a counselor, and also knowing he's not programmed for this. And so all of that makes this an incredibly interesting story for him alone. And that's the place where I'm struck as where we're watching this, how early they've identified that the growth of this character is going to be akin to somebody like a Data or a Spock, where they're going to have to overcome their natural sense of being and really grow as a being to become what this crew needs. And that's pretty fascinating. I mean, you know, when we talk about like character development, this episode really sets the trajectory then for the Doctor, you know, for the rest of the series.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, with Picardo's performances, you have to go with it and really start developing this character, right? Because it's so good. Like as a writer, you can't not do it. But I find the Doctor really interesting today. And you mentioned Data, and he is kind of like the Data character, the Spock character, but because he's programmed with the knowledge of so many people, you can do things with him that you can't necessarily do with Data or with Spock, because there are a lot of directions and you can have little things surface. Like, you know, this is the first time his little quips like McCoy come up, which becomes like a standard thing throughout the series, which I love. But what I find interesting thinking about him today, though, and comparing him with Data, is that the growth of artificial intelligence over the last year, and when you interact with ChatGPT or other large language models today, which I do every day, right now, they're more akin to, say, Data, where they've just got all this information dumped into them that they can access, and then they can repeat stuff to you. But as they keep evolving, it's very easy to see them being more like the Doctor. So this is where I think Voyager ultimately lines up more closely with the development of computers and artificial intelligence, then Data and the Next Generation will end up comparing, because these large language models, this artificial intelligence, they're going to end up like the Doctor, where they're drawing on lots of bits like he is from all the people he's programmed with, but they're going to be put into situations where they have to adapt, and they're basically thinking for themselves. And, you know, that will come in the years to come, probably more quickly than we think it will. And you can see an artificial intelligence like that trying to figure out how to deal with a situation just like the Doctor is, on their own, and becoming a person, becoming an individual, the way the Doctor does over the course of this series. So it's something that, you know, if we were talking about this 3 years ago, probably it's not something we would even discuss. But just because of our own technological developments over the past year or 2 years, and as we watch how quickly those change, suddenly you see this mirroring going on in the Doctor here.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, you know, we're going to pull here from later in Deep Space Nine, but we know the way in which the Doctor is created is as a reference from the personalities and the medical knowledge of many, many, many different doctors throughout the Federation, McCoy being one of them, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so what is kind of fascinating then is the whole idea of, you know, AI, it can move and grow based off its own programming, but it's always going to be like growing off that base programming. So if you're installing into a hologram the personalities of a bunch of different doctors, that makes sense then as to why he could grow that way. Of course, we also learned from Deep Space Nine that the personality he gave him was his own personality, Zimmerman's own personality. And so, and that really didn't jive. But it's like, you know, you can kind of understand as to why this character could pick up on pieces from all of these doctors whose knowledge he's programmed with. And yeah, I mean, I agree. It is interesting the way in which this feels, you know, even a little bit closer to home than it did before.
And I also suspect that you're very thankful that Neelix isn't the person who created the holographic Doctor program and put his own personality into it. And yeah.
Well, and on top of the Doctor, obviously, this is also a place where we begin to give Kes her own reason for being on Voyager outside of her relationship with Neelix.
Yeah.
So the fact that she's going to be a nurse here and going to learn to be a medical professional on Voyager is really interesting. And it's actually a lot of fun then for the character, and it makes it something interesting to watch. And what's fascinating too about this is that of these two characters who have joined the ship, you know, Kes is the more interesting character, and I think the one that's more enjoyable just kind of to watch on screen. And part of that is because she's this young character, this character who's basically almost like in our thought process, like an infant, and she's learning about the world. The beauty then is that her and the Doctor then are going to go on this journey together.
Yeah.
And that's what also makes that kind of fascinating. And so
yeah, it's a good pairing.
I really like the way the dynamics are playing out here, you know, especially with those two characters.
Yeah. And I think that might have been an unexpected dynamic.
I think you're right.
For the writers that they picked up on and then began to evolve that. But it does make a lot more sense as a pairing.
Yeah, I agree.
And I don't mean a pairing as in a couple, but I just mean two characters that are going on a similar journey and can help each other.
Yes.
Along the way. All right. Well, what are your final thoughts and what's your rating on this one?
I mean, I think everybody can tell from our conversation, this is really an episode that I couldn't quite remember And, you know, I remembered that it was the Vidians, you know, and what they were all about. But what I really liked about it was this episode fits so perfectly with what I want coming in to the series from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a really good episode of Voyager. Really, I think, nailing what Voyager can be and what we hope Voyager will be. And man, the performances are great in this episode, Neelix notwithstanding. I think everybody's kind of firing on all cylinders in this episode. And what's fascinating too is that we've created this race where, you know, running into them again is going to be quite fascinating, because whereas these two Vidians are less aggressive, does that mean that all Vidians are going to be like this? You know, I can't answer that question. Mm-hmm. I can't say that right. That's going to be the case. And so it's really good. And I love it, man. I love it. And so I'm going to give this 4.5 out of 5 lost lungs, because it's great. I'm super excited about now continuing here in Voyager, because this episode kind of puts me right back on that track of where I want to be.
Yeah, yeah. As you mentioned Vidians several times there, I was just thinking about the fact that the aliens in the episode were originally called the Phages, and then they were named the Vaporeans, and that was spelled Vaphoran. And it still appears in the closed captions, or at least it did at the time. And the one of the characters, Dareth, actually says Vaforin in the transporter room, and then they dubbed over it with Vidians. But the reason they changed the name, apparently, is that none of the actors could pronounce Vaforin in the same way.
Mm.
And so they changed the name to Vidians, which is Vidians, Vidians. And I'm just not sure how that's easier to pronounce consistently than Vaforin is. And I'd also say that not being able to pronounce something the same way consistently has never stopped them in the past, Bajor and Bajor. So it's just an interesting little bit of trivia there related to this episode. But no, I love the elements in this story. It's another one where, doing this rewatch, I remember that there's the episode where Neelix has his lungs stolen, but it wasn't until rewatching it to prepare for this that I remembered how much I do like what's going on in the episode and how much good stuff the writers have put in here and the seeds they've planted for them to work with for future stories. So I think it's a really excellent one, and I'm going to give it, I know this might sound like a bad rating, but it's actually a good one. I'm going to give it 7 kitchen fires. All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Phage. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversation beyond the podcasts. It is a closed group, so if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. But you'll see a post for this episode there on the timeline, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose to the journey, and that will come to Matthew and me by email. And also, of course, you can find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get those from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not surgically reattaching recovered organs, where can people find you?
Well, when I'm not doing that, which keeps me relatively busy, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network in the 602 Club, talking about all of those franchises outside of Star Trek that we love. So we hope you'll check that out. Over on the Nerd Party Network, you'll find me with Aggressive Negotiations and John Mills talking about Star Wars each and every week. as well as a little show called Outpost, talking about all the chapters of the Harry Potter series. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to figure out what to do with your ceiling because you've realized it's ugly, where can people find you?
Well, I mean, I don't have time for that, Matthew. I'm too busy being jealous as I stare at the ceiling. So
it's understandable. It's understandable. Yeah.
Jealous of other people's ceilings.
Yeah, it's the worst.
But when I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network. As you mentioned, talking about Star Trek with you on all of those other shows. You can also find me in the back catalog on many shows. Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time as well. So there's lots of my thoughts on Star Trek for you to catch if you want to dig into the back catalog and try out those other shows as well. You can also find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky is where I'm most active right now, but I'm on all the networks, so hit me up wherever you are. I'd love to chat with you there. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your help. So a huge thank you goes out to everyone who is supporting us now. Thank you so very, very much. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next time when we'll spend a little time passing through the cloud.
Well, Chris, I mean, I guess that sounds pretty normal. So let's set course for home. Recording.
Neelix's holographic pants. You'd have to be careful if you were wearing holographic pants, because if the emitter failed, suddenly, you like you're in line at the grocery store, and suddenly your pants emitter fails.
Oh, I don't want his pants.